The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Barry Kenny is with me. Barry Kenny, you will know from being the spokesperson for Irish Rail and Director of Communications for Éireann Rathearn. He is not here in that role now. He is here because he has voluntarily spent a fairly significant amount of time in Ukraine in recent years after the war broke out. You're just recently back from Lviv, Barry. Yeah. First of all, tell us your reasoning for wanting to go to Ukraine.
Look, I suppose when the full-scale invasion started in February 2022, there was a kind of visceral emotional reaction. I think people, if they reflect, will all remember that. And there was kind of, you know, what can we do? And I, from me, my and your era, like, we remember the kind of almost joy of the Berlin Wall coming down and of Eastern Europe effectively being freed. And it is that kind of visceral feeling that that is now at risk again, and that, you know, both the suffering of people in Ukraine, but also the wider risk is there. So that's what got me probably engaged in it. I went to Moldova in the summer of 2022. It was a British charity called Refugee Support Europe that had a centre there because per head, certainly at the time, it had the highest number of Ukrainian refugees and a very poor country in itself, Moldova. And we helped a lot of people there from the very affected areas, your Mariupols, your Mykolaiv, that region. And I suppose it was early 2023, I realised that there was an opportunity to volunteer directly in Ukraine. I remember seeing something on social media and casually saying to my wife, did you know it's actually possible to volunteer in Ukraine? To which she gives a look as if to say, I know where this is going. I know what you're trying to do here. But over time, as was thought about it some more, and as they went for the first time then in April 2023.
Can you give us a sense of how war-torn the entire country is? Because it's one of the things that I've never quite been able to get my head around. You see footage of and hear stories of entirely functional parts of the country, like a normal Western democracy, as if it is not at war. And then you see the bleak face of a country at war. How do you square that?
It's a huge country. And again, you kind of, maybe because it's beside such an enormous country in Russia, we don't really appreciate the scale of it. I mean, if I get the train from the border in Poland to Kyiv, that's an 11-hour night journey, right? So there are some that can go a bit faster, but it's that length of a journey. So I've been in Kyiv and Lviv during the times that I've been there, and neither are representative of those kind of images. But if you go further east, if you go south, you will see a lot more destruction. You will, of course, see the impact of the war. You will see areas where which have been directly targeted, and you'll also see it very visibly in things like, you know, sandbags at the ground levels of public buildings, of the type of, you know, military presence that is there, both kind of off duty and other facilities. And just, I suppose, the way the Ukrainian people themselves mark the fact that this is happening. It's there in culture, it's there in memorials, it's there everywhere. The further west, the less obvious. I mean, Lviv on its face is a very elegant Western European, or sorry, Central European city that appears to be a very pleasant place to spend some time. But it's there.
And what about the relationship with Russia as observed from the people with you that you interact with? Is it hatred? Is it resentment? Is it fear?
It's hatred now. It is hatred now. That, you know, because, you know, we can very much personalize it in Putin, who clearly is, you know, a megalomaniac terrorist, right? But the fact of the matter is that, you know, his rule in their mind has been facilitated over a period of time, and that no meaningful opposition has emerged to prevent it. You know, we see in Iran, we see women protesting. You saw what happened in Syria. You see Georgia currently, you know, standing against the type of oppression that's trying to be put in place there. But they don't see that that's coming. So, you know, it is very
There is a decent pattern of the opposition getting murdered, which does limit enthusiasm to join its ranks.
True. And, you know, all these things are easier said than done when you're outside a country. But the fact of the matter is, if you are Russian military, if you are on our land, you know, death or imprisonment is really all anybody wishes for you. And a huge frustration with the fact that no opposition has come.
Did you get any sense of a resentment towards ostensible allies? Because when you look at what Volodymyr Zelensky has been trying to point out, it has been that Ukraine has been repeatedly let down, whether that be in giving up nuclear arms with theoretical backstop guarantees that are dissolved, whether it be signing multiple ceasefires which haven't been honoured. Is there a sense of You can't trust anybody?
Look, I think they have no option but to try to trust the West. There's certainly a disappointment there, but I don't think it manifests itself as directly because, you know, the new German Chancellor appears to be more minded. So, you know, there's not a wish to burn bridges. Obviously, what we've seen in the past week, and there was already, I think, a reaction to, you know, comments from Trump like, oh, Zelensky's a dictator. By, you know, basically going further four square behind Zelensky. It's like, you know, you're attacking our guy here. So actually his actions, I think, are shoring up support for Zelensky. Because no one, you know what I mean? Ukraine, it's not like Russia where they're putting Putin as this figurehead up, whatever. He was a democratically elected president. They know his strengths. They know his weaknesses. They kind of, you know, they're hugely appreciative of his leadership and how he has, as was built that defense and support internationally. But they say, oh, did he do this right? Did he do this wrong? But right now, I think if you had an election in the morning, I think he probably would be re-elected. And I'm not sure you'd have said that maybe even 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Is there optimism in respect of the conflict? Do they think that they can win? Do they think that they can fight to a stalemate?
I mean, again, the three visits are instructive in this. In April 2023, it was just before the counteroffensive, as we call it. And there was a real bullishness then. I felt both from the local volunteers and the international volunteers, of whom there are many. That kind of became a bit more tempered and, you know, kind of, oh, well, we're settling in for a long fight now. People are talking about post-war more this time, their lives, you know, what happens. There's probably an unspoken acceptance that the full territory from 2014 is not going to be achievable at this time. But, you know, you don't do what the Americans did and stand up a microphone and concede all that. You know, you've got to fight, you've got to try to, both on the battlefield and diplomatically, make sure that it gets the best deal because they're coming. You know what I mean? If he's emboldened, he's already got part of Georgia, there's more there. He's already got part of Moldova, been in all three countries in the last 3 years, and they all feel it.
Well, how do they feel it in Moldova? Because again, going to President Zelensky's commentary, some of what he has talked about is the thing of they came for and I remain silent. They will come for Ukraine. Mm. And if nothing is done, where Putin will head next will be the other states, the previous USSR states in the Eastern Bloc. Is there fear, do you think? Did you talk, when you spoke to people in Moldova, what's their...
Yeah, and in Moldova is very interesting because, of course, you do have this slice of Moldova Transnistria that is Russian controlled, and there is a notable opposition that would be pro-Russian there, and it's this whole thing of, well, do you want this war? Do you want our country destroyed in that way? It's quite a powerful message, really, to a person who's maybe not politically engaged. But again, Moldovans know it; they know they're next, and they have a, you know, President Sandu is, you know, again an incredible leader. She's been re-elected and is doing all she can to bring the country towards the EU.
What view has it given you of our position and our role? When you then return to Ireland, do you have a sort of a sense of it's time to get realistic, guys, and we need to accept a militarization, or stay where we are? Thankfully, we are somewhat immune to it, thanks to geography and neutrality.
There's no contradiction between defence and neutrality. And I think that's what we've just got to cop onto now. You know what I mean? I mean, the fact of the matter is, we've got the subsea cables. You know, we've got the type of hybrid warfare that we know. We can see in the elections in Eastern Europe. We can see in Romania what happened in Moldova itself, other places. What makes us think we're immune from that? So I have to say, it's a topic I would never have been engaged in the past and probably said be the same. Military, sure. You know, what do we need that? We need to get serious about self-defense, particularly if the Americans are gone. And I think there's a tolerance, you know, it's got to a point where, you know, and what proportion of your GDP is defense? 9.2%. You know what I mean? It's a tough one to do. It's a tough one to defend. So there's absolutely no contradiction. I think it's dishonest to say that there is.
I assume you have spoken to the people that you would have dealt with and friends in the country post the White House debacle. What's the sense that you're getting of it? I mean, I know you said that it's sort of coalesced support behind Zelensky, but do they think that their main supporter is now abandoning them?
Yeah, it's real kind of shock. And how one woman that we worked with there used the word apocalyptic, right? So there is a desperate fear there because, you know, again, and you alluded to it earlier, you know, Europe hasn't done what Europe can do. And there's a doubt that that will happen. Hopefully, what we see today will start to change that. So, it is a shock. As I say, the support is there. And also, actually, I thought it was reassuring. And look, there's a great atmosphere when you're there volunteering. As I say, this is local women that have been there doing this for 11 years. You've got long-term volunteers, the likes of myself, that try to get there when you can. And all working together, you know, of a like mind. And not as many people are obsessed as I clearly am. It's great to work with them. And I think that spirit is as strong as ever to do what needs to be done to be with their country, people who are suffering directly.
On the topic of the volunteering, you volunteered to do what?
I was peeling and shredding spuds and beetroot and onions and garlic, and I was cracking
this,
walnuts.
Was this racist stereotyping of you when you arrived?
It was the very first job I got was peeling spuds, absolutely. What Lviv Volunteer Kitchen does is we make meal packs for the frontline. So basically, we prepare all these veg, they dehydrate them there and then, put them into these packs. So you make borscht, other soup, they make energy bars, other snacks. So as if you're out in the trenches, if you're away from, you know, more sophisticated cooking facilities with the soups, all you got to do is add water and you make this and some other tinned military supply materials. So just providing sustenance. And I think it's a real great way. And Ukraine is very good at this. Also in Lviv, multiple sites where people can go into public libraries, for example, and help make camouflage nets. So like the ordinary man and woman in the street can feel that whether they are directly there, whether they're a family there, that they're making a contribution. And it's a very special feeling to be part of that. The big camouflage nets, when they finish one, the whole group stops and sings the national anthem together as they roll it up. It's quite an emotional thing to see. Animal sanctuaries, animals that have been rescued from around the country. There's a huge run called Domivka in Lviv, and there's a Saturday volunteer dog walk. We all go up and walk dogs, or people might go into the cat enclosure and look after those. So there's a huge volunteer. There's also actually volunteers and international and local doing things like making drones for the army. The first guy I dealt with when I went to Lviv Volunteer Kitchen has now left that, and he has a separate operation, and his main business is making drones, and he can turn them out at €300. No profit, straight to the front.
Now that I find slightly worrying on the grounds that you would have thought that if you are fighting an enemy like Russia, when it comes to military industrial production, if you're at the point of needing volunteers to make homemade drones to fight your battle, that doesn't bode well.
But I think the volume of what's happening now is very significant. And I think that, you know, if you take overall the level of production of drones in Ukraine, but either supplied externally or internally, that's what's helping them turn the tide. And they are, you know, we always hear when Russian advances on, we aren't actually hearing a lot about the fact that right now, at the front line, Ukrainians appear to be starting to push back, certainly at points. So look, it's an appalling scenario for a free, independent, young country to have to face. But stoic they are.
When you look then at a meeting happening today involving countries like Germany, the Netherlands, Canada, Finland, Sweden, Romania, all of that, do you find at any point, do you think to yourself, what is the point in little me on my own going out to Ukraine to volunteer?
No, I don't, because like none of us on our own can do much about any issue in the world, you know, from climate change to this. But I don't know. It's just for me, there was a time to kind of stand up and be counted, really. You know what I mean? It can't be that way. We can't see the progress and the liberty that people in our continent, right in our backyard, and we know these people, we work beside them here. That have moved from across, you know, the EU and from Ukraine and other countries to here to work with us. We can't abandon them. Poland's instructive. I remember interrailing in Poland in 1995. Look at the place now. I mean, this is an absolute, you know, hugely modernised. The benefits of EU membership, the infrastructure, everything that has happened there. You know, free, prosperous, strong nation, one of the strongest in Europe militarily now. Are we going to say all that was for nothing? Here you go, Vlad. It's yours? Absolutely not.
Barry, thank you very much for coming in. That is Barry Kenny.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.